How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Every week, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. So much stuff to talk about today, as we have every week. There are no big shows today, amazingly, but last week was the big show of the summer, SummerSlam from WWE. We're going to talk to you about the results of that show, where things might be going. Talk about the main event of the next show, plus Raw on Monday night. Both last week's show, where we had a confrontation between Kevin Nash and CM Punk, which apparently is going to lead to a match, if you can even comprehend such a thing. We're going to talk about that, plus a bunch of other news, including the biggest story in the history of UFC, at least according to Dana White, that being UFC on Fox. Starting in 2012, a 7-year deal worth approximately $90 to $100 million per year. Approximately three times what they were making for their Spike TV deal. They are moving to network TV for the first time. Four shows per year on Fox. A bunch of shows on FX. Ultimate Fighter. The fights are going to be going live. We'll tell you all about the deal, what you're going to get to see, why Dana White is so excited, how it affects pay-per-view. It does, in fact, affect pay-per-view. We'll tell you about that. Plus, pretty much everything you ever wanted to know about that story, plus your emails on that topic as well. We're also going to talk Mystico. He, apparently, the original Mystico, returned last night at the WWE house show in Tacoma. We'll give you the results of that show, what happened with Mystico. Plus, drama in TNA, not just with a former tag team getting a tryout in WWE and not shaking people's hands, which shockingly has gotten the wrestling world up in arms over the last week. But Matt Hardy has been fired. According to TMZ, he crashed his vehicle into a tree. He was arrested. They were concerned that he perhaps was not in a proper state of mind. Tests are being conducted. TNA has fired him. We'll tell you about that and so much more. It's all coming up after the break. Don't forget, hours of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts entertainment coming up here on Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours. Pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM 208, streaming live on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, and of course, Sports Byline USA affiliates nationwide. Tons of stuff to talk about today, and Mike, obviously, the big story. As Dana White noted, the biggest story in the history of UFC. They are on network television. I shouldn't even say starting in 2012. 2012 is when the new deal goes into effect. But coming up in just a couple of months, on the 18th anniversary of the first ever UFC event, they're going to be going 1 hour on Spike, a live show. We don't have any matches yet, but it's going to be the first ever show on Fox coming up in just a couple of months. We'll get you the exact date here in a moment. But Mike, how big is this deal?
It's a really, really, really big deal. There's no other way to say it. Somebody out there can boo-boo it a little bit or say, well, you know, hockey, nobody watches hockey, and they got a $190 million deal, and it doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is the Ultimate Fighting Championships is going to appear on Fox. They've got a 7-year deal at $90 million $90 to $100 million a year, reportedly. They get to spread their wings on FX is a powerful, powerful cable station. They're top five. They're always top ten, and occasionally top five. They have original cutting-edge programming. They've been able to push the envelope. It's what seems to be an incredible merger that just, again, top to bottom for the UFC. I mean, obviously, we got to wait and see how things turn out, what fights end up on there, how much Fox wants to touch the production and things like that. But, I mean, on the surface this year, and it's been a big year when it comes to, you know, things like this happening. Donna Goldsmith left WWE at the beginning of this year, and we had, you know, Sinclair and Ring of Honor coming together, and there's been a lot of media things that have happened with the all campus sports this year. Strikeforce, obviously, and the UFC buying them, and everything else that's gone on. This is certainly looking like it's going to be the topper of what's already been a incredible year. And again, I don't know how it's possible right now for anyone to say that this is anything other than a seminal, incredible, huge, big moment in the history of the UFC and in mixed martial arts. And the fact that it's going to be going, the first Fox show is going to be going up against Manny Pacquiao's pay-per-view fight, which looked like it was going to have, you know, all guns, you know, trained on it by Time Warner to get as much word out and use as much synergy as possible all the way across the board. I mean, this could be the official death knell. If it's a successful night for the UFC and for Fox, it could be basically the symbolic death knell for boxing in North America, basically on TV and being the combat sport. I mean, obviously, most of the people listening to this show probably already know the deal with MMA and where boxing is at right now. But for, you know, the rest of the world, it may end up being one hell of a wake-up call that night.
Well, the way it's going to work out is November 12th, Anaheim, California is the date. It is head-to-head with the Pacquiao pay-per-view, although, unless something has changed, the last word that I got is it's going to be a one-hour show, and the idea is the UFC event is going to be off the air before Pacquiao even goes to the ring. So, at this point, if you want to watch both events, that's kind of the big hook they're doing. It's going to be, this is not FX, this is going to be on Fox, on network television. They're going to do two fights in 1 hour. The idea is all your friends show up at 6 o'clock p.m. They watch UFC on Fox for free. They get all excited about MMA, and then they can switch to the boxing pay-per-view and see the Pacquiao fight before they even get down there to the ring. So it's kind of like a big sports, mixed martial arts, I guess combat sports night for your average fan. That's kind of the way that they're promoting it here. And it is the first ever, basically the way that it worked with Spike TV is their Spike TV deal allowed them to work out deals with networks. And obviously, Fox is giving them this this show on the 12th. And the official, you know, they've still got Ultimate Fighter. Ultimate Fighter is going to wrap up in December. They're still going to be on Spike TV up through the end of the year. And it's very interesting. You look at how both sides are treating this. Spike TV did, in fact, issue a statement a couple of days ago saying that this is the end. This will be the final season of Ultimate Fighter on Spike TV. And they thank UFC and said it was great for both sides, and they're now going to concentrate on their own homegrown shows that they produce, that they own, which obviously is not TNA. We can talk about that a little bit later, how this might affect TNA. But Fox, on the other hand, you know, they're going to be going all out with promotion. You know, one of the things with a television deal, you know, Dana White has talked about how they've been going full bore into television negotiations for a long time now. And it's interesting because there have been rumors about a lot of different things. And from many different sources, it appears that they were very close to making a deal with NBC, and something happened. And I don't know what it is, but pretty much all sides say that whole deal, and obviously the deal fell apart because they're on Fox, but apparently they were close to a deal with NBC, and now they've gotten the deal with Fox. And when Dana in the past has talked about a network deal, you know, he's talked about this is what we want. We want to be able to be in charge of production and this and that. And he has stated that with this deal, they are interested in Fox's input into their production, but he says Fox has trusted them enough to handle their own production. And that's one of the big things that they wanted. And there are going to be some changes. Other things will not change. Joe Rogan is still going to be doing commentary with Mike Goldberg. A lot of things that you're used to when you watch UFC are going to stay very much the same. Some things are going to be different. They are getting rid of the gladiator opening, which I guess we should discuss that very quickly. It doesn't sound like a big deal. A lot of people are probably going to be happy, but it's something that if you're a fan of UFC, that's all you've ever known from UFC, is that gladiator open. And what are your thoughts on that, Mike, as far as, I mean, this is like, it seems like not a story at all, and maybe it's not, but it's kind of a big deal. The gladiator opening that people have seen from the very beginning, it's gone now.
Yeah, that's true, but to be honest, the WEC version that they were doing, I kind of wished when the UFC it merged everything up with the WEC, they kind of would have used that just to do something different that was in the same vein that was still pretty cool. And to be honest with you, I think the Teenage Wasteland video that would be, or the Bob O'Reilly by the Who video that they show to the live crowd before the shows take place, if you tempered that thing to just basically focusing on the fighters that will be appearing that night on the show and doing a version of that, I think would, that may actually be a way for something to resonate better. But when it comes to those openings, I mean, look at CBS with Strikeforce, with college football, with pro football, with a lot of things. I mean, CBS does a hell of a job with those things. And again, I would trust Fox and I would trust the UFC to come up with something new that is still going to be, you know, great for the fight fan that's been watching them for a long time, but also something universal to be the first thing that goes out and maybe touches a new fan that could be watching that night for the first time.
It's almost like it's been used for so long that it should be used until the end. That's kind of the feeling. I don't really care one way or the other, to be honest with you, but I always think about that sometimes when, you know, you watch UFC events, and if you've been a fan for a long time, there's certain things about it that just, they feel comfortable to you. You know, some people say things about Rogan and this and that, and maybe it's time for new announcers, or maybe Rogan's going to do this or that, but, you know, there's something comforting when you turn on the television, and there's Joe Rogan, and there's Mike Goldberg, and there's your Gladiator opening. I mean, listen, I'm not one of those people that thinks that nothing should ever change, because God knows I've been talking about how something needs to be done about Ultimate Fighter for about the past 3 years now. But certain things, certain small things, it's almost like a comfort for people. That you've seen it for so long that any sort of change is going to sort of freak people out. And this, you know, I doubt this will, it's not going to make probably any difference business-wise, but there is something to taking away something that people have been used to since the very beginning. Now, on the subject of Ultimate Fighter, it is going to continue. And Dana White in interviews has suggested that in his opinion, and I don't know about this, but in his opinion, he thinks Ultimate Fighter can go on forever. That's right. Until the end of time, there can be Ultimate Fighters. They are tweaking it. It used to be that they would get fighters into a house, they would tape for 6 weeks, they'd put the series together, and it would air on Spike TV. Now, they are going to begin taping Monday, they're going to tape 4 days worth, they're going to throw the show together, they're going to air it on Friday, and in the last 20 minutes or so of the show, the fight is going to be live. You're going to have live fights every Friday night. That means the guys are going to be they're going to be stuck in the house for 12 weeks, which is going to result in some pure legit insanity, and it will affect the coaches as well. We'll talk about that when we come back from a break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Before the break, we were talking about UFC 2 Fox, specifically the Ultimate Fighter, before we went to break, and how from this point forward it is going to be kind of a live season in the sense that every week they're going to tape a new show. They'll start taping on Monday. They'll tape to about Wednesday or Thursday. They'll produce the show. They'll put it on the air on Friday night. And then in the last 20 minutes of the show, the fights are going to air live. So live fights every Friday night on FX for each season of Ultimate Fighter. And what that means, the big differences between that and what they're doing now, aside from the live fights, is that instead of sequestering the fighters in a house for 6 weeks, which, of course, if you've watched the seasons, any of the seasons, you know, getting sequestered in a house for 6 weeks drives dudes nuts. Now these men are going to be sequestered in a house for 12 weeks, which God only knows what that's going to produce. But also, it used to be that they would tape the season, and then as the season was airing, the coaches would start their camp for their upcoming fight at the end of the season. Now, since the season is essentially going live, the trainers are going to be doing their full camps during each season of Ultimate Fighter. So every week, the coaches are going to have to be training either with their guys, or the coaches will be there at some point during the day and then have to leave to go do their own coaching. I guess we'll see how they work it out, but some major changes to Ultimate Fighter. Obviously, it's going to freshen up the show a bit. You know, there are issues. I mean, the big problems with Ultimate Fighter are not related to the fact that the fights are not live, in my opinion. There are a lot of issues with the show, but this does freshen it up, and we'll see how it does in terms of ratings and if it can revitalize a show that, at least to me, has gotten quite long in the tooth, unless you've got two coaches that really dislike each other.
Oh, God, absolutely. And even, you know, when you have two coaches that don't like each other, I mean, we knew about Rashad and and Rampage going into the thing, and it was just like, I wasn't saying, you know, hurry up and get this thing over with, but there's so many, you know, goofy pranks and things like that that I can handle before I want to see dudes throw hands when they, you know, hate each other that much. You know, it's new to FX, so it's a good idea to do these things. They're talking about incorporating fan balloting into, you know, what fights that they would want to see. And I'm not going to say that this is going to make me watch Ultimate Fighter more than any other time if I happen to miss it. I have a feeling I'm just going to go ahead and miss it and not feel too terribly bad about it and just have to catch a replay. But, you know, live fights are still live fights. I'd rather watch a live fight than a tape fight, even though they've done a great job at guarding their secrets during the production of previous seasons of The Ultimate Fighter. Hey, again, a live fight is still a live fight, and you know what? Friday Night Fights on ESPN2 is usually on, and it'll be one of those things where maybe you can flick back and forth between the two and have something like that happen. So, again, you know, you might as well do it if you're going to keep the show around. And, again, I'm not the biggest fan of it anymore, but if you're going to keep the show around, you might as well throw some things in like that to make it just different and new. And, you know, the dynamic of the coaches getting ready for their fights during the show, too, is going to be interesting, and we'll see how they play off of that. I mean, at least there's some intriguing things to this, and we'll freshen it up a little bit.
The key to the show, to me, if you look at the ratings for the last several seasons, is not so much the not even really the level of the fighters, although it's, you know, to me it's best if you've got a higher caliber of fighter than otherwise, but to me, if you look at the success of the GSP season and you look at the failure of the Brock Lesnar season, to me the key is you've got to have coaches that really don't like each other, that you really can see the dislike in the coaches. You know, Brock Lesnar is a huge star. Brock Lesnar is a huge pay-per-view draw. People love to see Brock Lesnar destroying people. Do people really want to see Brock Lesnar coaching on Ultimate Fighter and the coach on the other side is a guy that he respects and does not dislike? You know, that's a big difference there between paying money to see Brock Lesnar go in the cage and kill somebody and turning on the TV to see Brock and another guy he respects coaching guys. You know, I thought the season was going to do better than it did. I'm surprised that season ended up the lowest rated season of all time, but still, in hindsight, when you look back at it, I don't want to say it makes sense to be the lowest rated, but it does make sense that it didn't do huge numbers because of the dynamic of the coaches. The best seasons of Ultimate Fighter have always been built around coaches who really don't like each other.
Plus, I mean, again, the concept is tired. Unless you have, you know, drunken idiots or, you know, that level of foolishness in the house, I mean, again, it's the same thing over and over. That's why I was kind of more of a fan of maybe, you know, limiting it down, having more intense training with less guys, or just other ways to try to mix the show up. Because, again, I mean, at least one thing about last year's, you know, or the last season, it may actually get a better rating than this upcoming season, which obviously is going to be pushed by Spike to push other shows, but they're not going to have much interest in it whatsoever.
Some other notes from the deal, in addition to The Ultimate Fighter going to FX, all of their shows are going to end up on FX, the countdown specials and that sort of thing. They're going to be doing pre- and post-fight specials on FX before the pay-per-views, so that's going to be a pretty big deal. If you've been watching Fox of late and watching sports on Fox, apparently they've been plugging UFC hard, and this is in months in advance of the actual deal going down. One interesting thing about plugging and that sort of thing is that Spike TV is now going to have a huge hole. And they've got TNA, which when they sent out their release about the end of Ultimate Fighter and talking about shows that they're going to concentrate on, they did not mention Impact. Now, Impact they don't do great numbers, but Spike is still a low-rated network, and the show doing a 1-1 rating every week, it's still doing about double the station average. So as long as the costs of the show are not extraordinarily high, and as long as they don't decide they want to move in a direction away from pro wrestling or mixed martial arts or men's TV or whatever, Impact is probably going to be safe for a little while. But it is interesting that they have been doing, on Spike TV, tons of plugs for Bellator on MTV2. And, of course, there had been talk for a long time that when Spike TV, when UFC and Spike TV parted ways, Spike TV might try and make a deal with Bellator. And at this point, Spike is saying there's nothing to that. Bellator is saying there's nothing to that. But it is very interesting that they are going hardcore plugging this Bellator Fighting Championships if there's no interest in bringing them to Spike TV.
Well, and the thing is, and they've traded back and forth on telecasts as far as hyping each other's show throughout the season of Bellator. And, you know, the MTV executives were up at the Foxwoods yesterday for the Bellator show. And, you know, look, TNA Impact is played on, you know, without much fanfare on MTV Trace. Again, it would make perfect sense. Look, MTV 2 doesn't keep things for a long time. I mean, Wrestling Society X, they had the Lucha show. There's been, you know, and most of their shows, period, they're quick on and they're quick off because attention spans change, things change. I mean, there's very few constants on the MTV-branded networks that they have. They usually gun through something and they're done with it. So it makes perfect sense for it to go over to Bellator. I mean, they work hand-in-hand anyway. And again, M2 can put anything on in that spot and be fine with it, and I don't think anybody there will miss it that much, or at least miss it as much as Spike would probably want to have it.
A couple of other interesting notes as far as it affects WWE. WWE is, suffice to say, they are not making $90 to $100 million per year in rights fees. And I can tell you that there are folks in WWE that are none too happy about the fact that UFC got this deal. And also none too happy about the fact that, officially they are saying that it's not a big deal. They're different audiences, the whole nine yards. But the reality is there were people in WWE this week that were very upset about the idea that Ultimate Fighter was going to be airing live, at least the fights live on Friday nights, because that is, in fact, Friday night SmackDown night. And it's interesting because we don't know what time Ultimate Fighter is going to air on Friday night. There is a possibility we'll air at 10 o'clock after SmackDown, but you may also have an issue with local news telecasts coming on at 10 p.m. and them wanting to put the show at 9, in which case it would go head-to-head with the second hour of SmackDown. So we may be having UFC versus WWE head-to-head battles on Friday nights, and I was told this past week that WWE is now, and they do this every year, I mean, let's be honest, but they are considering we need to make changes in SmackDown starting with the new fall season, which if you watch SmackDown of late, they need to make changes to the fall season long before UFC announced they were going on Spike. But there is discussion, at least, of the fact that this is taking place and the Friday night deal and everything like that. It's funny because we have mentioned for years now that Friday is not the best night for SmackDown. The best night for SmackDown has and remains Thursday night. Now, the whole Friday night thing, it all started when Chris Rock had his show, and I think it was still UPN decided they were going to put it on Thursday night in the SmackDown time slot, and so SmackDown got moved to Friday. And for whatever reason, they just never moved back. Even when they switched networks, they have stayed on Friday night. They're obviously on Sci-Fi now, and they've they've remained on Fridays. Why? Your guess is as good as mine. But you know, if there was ever thought of moving back to Thursday, now that Ultimate Fighter is on Friday nights, to me, there is zero chance they're switching to Thursdays. Because now, if they do switch to Thursdays, they will probably feel that people will see that as them admitting defeat and running away from UFC, and they do not want people to have that impression that they feel that UFC is competition. So basically, I think we're stuck with SmackDown on Friday nights pretty much forever.
Well, and that's fine, and you can let them do that, too, because I don't think at this point it matters. I mean, obviously, you know, there's media issues and other things like that where WWE should have their feelings hurt by this whole thing, but realistically, I mean, they can be unhappy with the UFC deal all they want. That's what legitimate sports gets. And no matter at the end of the day, no matter how many movies they make or crossover things that they do or any of that stuff, UFC is a legitimate sport. That's why they got this deal. That's why they're so important. And no matter what WWE tries to say or do, it's really not going to matter.
We're going to talk more about this when we come back from the break. We also have a lot of pro wrestling news as well, including the firing of Matt Hardy. What happened there? All of it coming up after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. Joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We have so much stuff to talk about here today. I do want to start off by offering my condolences to Ed in San Antonio, whose father passed away today. For those of you that know Ed, who have listened to his show on Blog Talk Radio, I first talked to Ed about 10 years ago on this very show, Wrestling Observer Live, back when we were on IATA in the late 90s. Ed in San Antonio used to call in, and I'll always remember that Ed would call in, and I always had this vision in my mind of what Ed in San Antonio looked like. I actually thought that in my head, he looked like Miguel Torres. For those of you that that have followed UFC and know Miguel Torres, whenever I heard Ed on the show, I always thought, this man looks like Miguel Torres. I just had this vision in my mind. I met Ed, and suffice to say, he did not look like Miguel Torres. Ed's a huge, big dude. And we became friends, and Ed is the man responsible for a lot of things. I know that I make a lot of fun of Ed here and there, and still calls into the shows all the time and that sort of deal. But if it were not for Ed, you know, we would not be doing our annual conventions in Las Vegas every year. He is the man who arranged the very first one. And, you know, Ed makes a lot of fun of me and vice versa. But he is one of the biggest supporters of this show and this website. And we really do appreciate Ed. He's a very good guy. And I hope everything goes well for him. And from everybody here at Wrestling Observer Live and the website, very deep condolences to him on the passing of his father. So if you're friends with Ed on Facebook, maybe head up there and give him a little message. But hopefully all is well with him, and our best wishes to him and his family today. So I want to mention very quickly WrestlingObserver.com. Tons of shows up there if you love this show, and you only get to hear once per week and you want to hear more. Well, that's the place to go, WrestlingObserver.com. We do daily radio shows, pretty much daily, sometimes on a slow week such as this one. We didn't do a show yesterday, for example, but last week we did tons of shows. We have interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling up there. Mick Foley, we've had Ric Flair on the show. Brock Lesnar has been on the show. Bruno Sammartino, Lance Storm is on every other week. In fact, Lance Storm has a new book out that he talked about on his show this past Thursday. You can check that out at the in WrestlingObserver.com and StormWrestling.com as well. So tons of audio. If you want to get a sampling of what's up there, just head up to the website, scroll down the right-hand side of the page, a listing of our latest three free radio shows. It's only $10.99 a month. And I've said this many times, if you love this show, if you love this show and you only get here once per week on Sports Byline USA, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM 208, well, you are missing out. Check those shows out. If you like what you hear, sign up. Daily radio shows plus our full archive dating back to 2005. Somebody added it up, over 3,000 hours of, 3,000 shows. Actually, that would be over 3,000 hours of audio as well. It's all up there right now at your disposal. Your $10.99 gets you full access to everything. You can go to the archives. You can check stuff out. It's quite the bargain. And again, if you love this show, I guarantee you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. You can sign up for a month, try it out. If you don't like it, just cancel. And that's the end of that. It's very easy. And you can try listening to every show in the course of that month. See if you can do it. Most likely, you won't be able to. But anyway, we are talking about UFC on Fox here. And before we head to the next topic, any other thoughts on this deal, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, a few. Fuel, which is not being talked about a lot in this, and Fuel is mostly located, I would assume, on most cable operators. If you have to get a sports tier or something like that in a digital package, that's about where Fuel is at right now. But it's one of the properties that Fox is really, really wanting to develop and wanting to push. In April of this year, they named George Greenberg as the new head of the network. And why that was important is because he is a multiple-time Emmy winner. I think he's won like 16 Emmys. He was the one who helped to launch Fox Sports in the first place. And for those unaware, it was a huge, and I mean huge move when Fox, being the fourth network, being forgotten about, being, you know, yeah, they got The Simpsons and Tracy Ullman, they do some stuff like that, and, you know, some cool stuff, but, you know, without sports, well, they landed the NFL and took it away from CBS, and that helped to, just basically change the way people took Fox seriously, and that's what happens when you have major sports on your network. People tend to take you far more seriously, and they got the NFL, they repackaged it, they remarketed it. People that were longtime NFL supporters and people who were around for a while didn't like what they did. They got the NHL, they put in the glowing puck to try to make it easier on people. A lot of old NHL purists didn't like that, but they tried to. The one thing you can say about them, NASCAR being another great example of this, they've been able to help boost the eyeballs and boost the prestige and boost the interest level of the sports that they air. Now, whether that's good as far as the marketing aspects and things like that, because obviously the NHL and NASCAR and some other places besides the NFL have had some issues and some burnout that has come from, you know, just, I guess, in coincidence to being a part of Fox, NASCAR being the biggest example of that, with their fan base feeling alienated and leaving, and that's always possible with the UFC, but George Greenberg was a guy that helped launch all of that stuff, did many things on the Fox Sports regional networks, like the Best Damn Sports Show and things like that, and he was also a producer and director and was the reason at ABC did the Are You Ready for Some Football, All My Rowdy Friends marketing campaign with Hank Williams, which is still used to this day on ESPN. He's got a great mind, and he's the one that's helping out right now and running the Fuel Network. So one thing that the UFC has with this, too, and they've done a great job with their own promotion, with their own building and sticking to their guns and wanting things the way that they want it, they are now working with guys who have been there for a long time and know how to develop licenses and know how to increase the interest in the license. And again, ESPN is apparently, Dana White is feuding with them right now. I guess ESPN is having bad feelings with him, and they've decided to cancel an interview for the Rio show, and he has responded on Twitter in typical Dana White style. So there's bad feelings there, but one of the reasons there is bad feelings is because of the influence this could have. I mean, this is a big deal. And why I said earlier on about Pacquiao, the symbolic end to that night, Floyd Mayweather is going to fight Ortiz coming up here in September. The big deal about that was CNN is going to re-air the HBO 24/7 series. The reason that Manny Pacquiao walked away from HBO earlier this year and is rumored to be one of the reasons, in fact, the main reason, that Ross Greenberg, who's got an unparalleled track record of success at HBO developing news and documentaries and live sporting events, the reason he was pushed out was because Pacquiao walked with Top Rank going to CBS and saying, we want you to use everything you have available to make Manny Pacquiao a bigger star. They had a 60 Minutes special on him. He was on the morning show. They promised him CBS specials, which basically flamed out, but Showtime aired a 24/7 of their own on that fight. Mayweather and Leonard Ellerbe, his manager, talked about it earlier on this week of how important of a deal that was, because they're going to do the same thing with CNN, and it was looking like Top Rank and Time Warner was going to do the same thing for the Pacquiao fight, which not that they won't anymore, they will, but if they don't have, I mean, if the week is dominated by the UFC and any of that night is taken away from the fact that Manny Pacquiao, I mean, the only fight out there is Pacquiao and Mayweather, and this could be a symbolic end, because if this gets completely overshadowed all week long by the Fox and the UFC machine, and they're beating that in, and it overtakes Pacquiao with all of that Time Warner support, it's going to be, to me, that would be the symbolic end to boxing.
You talked about this quite a bit on the show today, in fact.
Yes, we did.
You really are convinced of this.
I really am. I just because of... Look, the only fight you can make out, there's scenarios that can happen out of this. Obviously, it could be a bad night for both companies, or both Top Rank and the UFC. I doubt that's going to happen. You know, the worst that can happen, with still being a good thing for boxing, is the UFC just has a huge night, and, you know, at least for one night, they both have a good night. Pacquiao's got a good performance, and it leads to wanting to see Pacquiao Mayweather. But then they have to do that fight in 2012. That's the only other fight out there. That's it, as far as a big global fight. And they, you know, now they've been talking about in the last couple weeks, people in boxing, we got to get back on network TV. We need to get back on network TV. It's funny how that timing is working out now, too. And they're right, because who does want to spend $60 on bad fights unless it's going to be a major event? You know, they've lied about pay-per-view buy rates because, I mean, again, I don't know. I can't prove that they've lied about them, but it doesn't seem like the buy rates that have been talked about for the last couple of Mayweather and Pacquiao fights have been very impressive. I mean, we were talking about the UFC having a down fight, and they're looking at doing, what, 310,000 buys for the UFC 133 in Philadelphia, and that was a big down show for them. I mean, it's Pacquiao, Time Warner, Top Rank, HBO, they need to hit a grand slam November 12th, and now they're doing it being hampered even more by what is basically the new boxing and has far superseded boxing in many people's eyes. So unless they hit a grand slam that night, again, yeah, Mayweather and Pacquiao is going to draw, and it's going to be a big event no matter when it happens, if it happens in 2012. But outside of that, they need that night to do something. They need to do something that night, and they're just being hampered more by having the UFC and the Fox deal taking place.
You mentioned Dana and ESPN. Dana's mad. He's tweeted some not very nice things. Is his deal on Fox going to change Dana White? Is it going to force him to change the way that he behaves publicly?
I hope so. And that's nothing against Dana White, because I like Dana White. And there's something about that, you know, the guy who is not going to sugarcoat it. With that said, as Mean Gene would say, a little decorum, please. Even if Fox doesn't care about it, even if, you know, if at the end of the day, if none of it matters, it's still, to me, bad form. You can take shots and not do it in the verbiage he does. I mean, it doesn't have to be done, especially from a guy who is an executive and is, again, as the sport continues to grow and there's more, again, this is truck deals now and major sponsors and things like that, and changing sponsors, food companies, things like that that can be involved in this process. You just don't need to be acting like a fool like that if you don't have to, emotional or not.
How do you think Joe Rogan is going to fare with this new deal?
I think he'll be fine. I think, you know, there are going to be people who have a, you know, a microscope on Dana White and on Joe Rogan and people like that, you know, the TMZ type mentality of a lot of people of just, you know, kind of waiting on something like that to happen. But, you know, as long as his slip-ups and verbiage aren't incredibly bad, I think he'll be okay. I think Joe Rogan's would have a lot more leeway than Dana White, because, again, I don't think MMA is at the point where, you know, Joe Rogan is looked at as Pat Summerall or, you know, an announcer like that. So I think he can still get away with a little bit more. Now, whether he has to or not, that's a different story. I would say no, but I think he's got a lot more leeway than Dana White.
Now, speaking of TMZ, a little bit later on in the show, we'll talk about it right now. We'll talk more about UFC on Fox. I'm sure we'll have people asking about it in emails. But since we mentioned TMZ, TMZ yesterday reported that Matt Hardy was involved in a single vehicle crash into a tree. Police arrived at the scene. They believed that he was not in a proper state of mind. He was arrested, subsequently released, and subsequently released from TNA as well. And Matt Hardy has had a lot of problems of late. A couple of months ago, he put a video online of him and Jeff tasering his girlfriend, and it went all over the internet. Next thing you know, Matt Hardy is pulled from TNA television, and his brother obviously is still not on television after an incident where he showed up in no condition to perform at a pay-per-view, and just a rough time for the family. And then this occurred, and TNA did in fact release Matt Hardy, which is actually a story unto itself. We're going to talk about that more when we come back from the break, and more Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Before the break, we were talking about the firing of Matt Hardy from TNA. He has, in fact, been released, and I don't know. A lot of people have done a lot of things in TNA, including his brother. And I have to admit, I was surprised they actually fired Matt Hardy.
So was I, but you know what? Good. You got to start somewhere. I mean, A lot of people didn't see Jeff Hardy in New Japan this year with Naito on January 4th. I mean, it was pretty bad. And then obviously the story with the pay-per-view earlier on this year where Sting won the title. I mean, obviously there was that too. There's all of his, you know, ongoing legal issues already that have been going on since when he left the WWE. And, you know, Matt Hardy has had his share of interesting things on Twitter and interesting things going on. So, again, you got to start somewhere, I guess. And I think this is good because if he does need the help, and it sounds like he will, and whether he thinks he does or not, I would assume that the police, if all this stuff goes through, he's probably going to have to go get help. It probably is a good idea.
I didn't see the Naito match. What happened?
Those guys were ready to go from, you know, the TNA crew goes over, works the New Japan Tokyo Dome show annually every year. They've been doing it, I think, the last 3-4 years now. He was in poor condition. He was just frankly in poor condition and could barely get through the match with Tetsuya Naito, which is one of the young guys that they really wanted to give a touch to, and it certainly did not work out that way. And the match is probably up on YouTube or something like that, but it's, again, I wasn't there. I'm not in his body. I don't know what was going on, but there was something going on because that wasn't Jeff Hardy there that night wrestling.
The story from TMZ very quickly before we go to the break. Wrestling superstar Matt Hardy was arrested in North Carolina today for suspicion of driving while intoxicated. TMZ has learned. Busted this afternoon by the North Carolina State Highway Patrol. Released around 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And Hardy discovered in his Corvette, run and struck a tree. We'll talk about this more in Hour 2. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. We spent much of the first hour talking UFC to Fox. This hour, we're going to be talking some pro wrestling. We were talking Matt Hardy's arrest before the break. Matt Hardy, as noted in TMZ, the article we read before the break, according to North Carolina State Highway Patrol, a trooper discovered Hardy after his 2009 Corvette ran off the road and struck a tree. Hardy was by himself at the time, did not suffer any injuries. The trooper observed signs of impairment and arrested Hardy. He was charged with DWI. The trooper found no other contraband in the vehicle. Hardy submitted to a blood test. The results are pending, and he has since been released by TNA, and apparently there were a lot of Jeff Hardy fans or Matt Hardy fans that were did not believe this news. But in fact, if you go to the front page of ImpactWrestling.com, TNA releases Matt Hardy from the roster. TNA today released Impact Wrestling star Matt Hardy from its roster. Hardy was already under suspension from the company. So all of those claims by Matt that he was not, in fact, suspended, that he was taking time off, that he was going to get in the best shape of his life to return, which actually I think I've heard him say several times over the past 3 years. He was under suspension in TNA, and he has now been released. So there you go. I guess we shall see what the future is of Matt Hardy. Obviously, a lot of people talking, but we shall see how it goes.
I'll wait and scour YouTube as soon as we're done with the program and find out if he's posted anything up there giving his side of the story.
Actually, Shane Helms has spoken publicly about this, and he's very upset at places like TMZ for reporting this news and that sort of thing. And
I love it when guys who want to use viral video and things like that get upset when things come back to get them from places that, you know, survive with viral video and, you know, it's stories like this.
Well, TMZ got a police report, and the police report was because of something that Matt Hardy did, at least according to the police. So I don't know how you can be upset about TMZ for that, but I'm not Shane Helms. We'll be back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. When we last left you, and I'm talking last week, not the prior commercial break, when we last left you, SummerSlam was about to begin. It is now obviously over. It was not a week-long pay-per-view event. And as noted last week, the main event of the show, it was the big rematch, John Cena versus CM Punk with Triple H as referee. And I would like to note that I won the bet about whether or not Triple H was going to screw either man. Although it may come out that in the end he did. But on the show, he played an unbiased referee. He called it right down the middle. He did, in fact, count a pinfall for CM Punk when John Cena had his foot on the ropes at the end of the match. He did not see the foot on the ropes, reportedly. So in the end, it may come out that he did screw John Cena, or maybe CM Punk. That's kind of the storyline right now. After the match, Kevin Nash, who of course has been a longtime friend of Triple H, came out. He beat up CM Punk. He powerbombed him, at which point Alberto Del Rio cashed in the briefcase, left with the title. Pretty much the way that I had predicted it. And now we've got Del Rio as champion. We've got a Punk versus Kevin Nash feud beginning, which led to an angle on Monday night. And, well, we'll see where they go with John Cena coming up here at the next pay-per-view. And, I don't know. Mike, what'd you think about SummerSlam and the follow-up on Raw?
It's one of those shows where it was not a bad show, but when you go, was it worth $55? No. And that's my problem with it. And again, because it wasn't a bad show, it just, was it worth spending, you know, damn near $60 on it? No, it wasn't. And I think probably a lot of people were just, had some steam taken out of them at the end with Kevin Nash. And I just, I had no, you know, other thought than, other than Alberto Del Rio was leaving last week with the title. Knew that was going to likely be the case, but it was what they were going to do with Punk and how Cena was going to be positioned afterwards and all that stuff. And it looks like Cena is going to be okay. And to me, him going up against Alberto Del Rio, who people haven't exactly taken to and is as bad of a strong as a heel as you can get, I mean, to give him some shine back, as far as getting some love back from the people, this will probably be the best way to do it. And the promo he cut at the end of Raw, where it was not the goofy nonsense, it was a guy who has worked hard for his fan base and is constantly now getting screwed, at least seemingly, that is, because he's playing a part in the storyline, too, of Stephanie and Hunter going into his locker room and we never really knowing what happens afterwards, as what took place on Survivor or on SummerSlam and on Raw. It looks like him and Del Rio and him having some backbone and some huevos is actually a good thing. Now that leaves CM Punk and Kevin Nash. And I don't know. I was surprised on Monday. Kevin Nash, when he went out there, I was like, okay, how is this going to go? And I was surprised he got the what treatment. He seemed a little bit flustered out there. CM Punk went out there and I thought, you know, got the better of him in the verbal joust, how set up it was, how what they were told to either go ahead with or back off of. I mean, Punk seemed more comfortable out there and seemed like the bigger deal, which is good. And the only way I want to see a Punk-Nash match is if they're going to just have him go through Hunter-type cronies before it gets to, I don't know, Steve Austin at WrestleMania. I mean, I don't know how else this is going to work for CM Punk because I just don't. Again, I think they've dropped the ball in that they could have waited on Alberto Del Rio. He's not over like they want him to be over, too. I don't think people buy him like they expected to buy him. They could have went with Punk to do something for a little bit longer and waited on putting the belt on Del Rio, but now they've painted themselves into a corner with Punk, and obviously they have a plan. I just don't have a whole lot of confidence in that plan right now, but I'll just sit back and I guess have to see, but I don't. I mean, again, the verbal joust was great. Why do I want to see Kevin Nash? I don't know. I don't know. I would not want to see a Kevin Nash CM Punk match. I just don't want to see it.
Well, here's the first off, I actually enjoyed SummerSlam. I really had a good time. I thought the Randy Orton Christian match was awesome. I thought the main event was really good. I thought the Alberto Del Rio and the Nash stuff, a lot of people were really upset about the Nash thing, but I thought, well, let's see what happens here. You know, I mean, right when it happened, I thought, okay, well, you know, Hunter sent out his buddy to screw Punk. I didn't at the time think it would actually lead to a match, but apparently it is. And the thing with Nash, you know, you mentioned people giving him the what treatment and that sort of thing. I mean, yes, when Kevin Nash came back at the Royal Rumble this year as Diesel, everybody went crazy. But it's the Royal Rumble. It is a pay-per-view audience. It is a hardcore Boston crowd at a Royal Rumble pay-per-view. You can't take the reaction of Kevin Nash on that show and think that, oh my God, everybody watching this WWE show right now knows who this guy is. Yeah, think about this. Kevin Nash spent most of the last 6 or 7 years in TNA. So, aside from his big appearance at the Royal Rumble, he has largely been invisible for most of the younger WWE audience, of which there are an abundance. So, he left WWE to go to TNA in about 2003. So, for all those little 6, 7, 8-year-old kids that are out there buying Mystico matches, and they're out there in the crowd at Raw with their parents, you know, these kids were zero the last time Kevin Nash was in WWE, okay? The kids are like, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old. They were so young, they probably don't even remember when Kevin Nash was in WWE. You know, there are a lot of kids at WWE right now. And you can't expect everybody to have any idea who this guy is. Sure, some of the older people are going to remember and some of the parents and that sort of thing. But, you know, if you've got kids watching and they're dragging their parents to a show and their parents aren't really fans, or maybe their parents just got into it in the last 5, 6, 7 years, they don't know really who Kevin Nash is either. I know that's hard to believe for a lot of people listening to this show because we're all more hardcore fans. But, you know, these are young kids. These are young kids that weren't alive in 2003. These are the kids that are going to shows right now. Now, obviously not the entire audience or anything like that, but they need to go out there and they need to do some Kevin Nash video packages and they need to tell the world, this is who Kevin Nash is. This is why you should care. He was friends with Triple H for a long time. They have been pals. You got to explain this to your new audience here. That's kind of, it's been the problem with some of the CM Punk stuff of late, that some of it has been too inside. You know, I'm here talking about how some of these 8-year-olds weren't even born when Kevin Nash was in WWE in 2003. But my God, when Punk is out there talking about a character that Kevin Nash played in the mid-90s, in the early 90s, that was a long time ago. Les Thatcher was doing bodybuilding contests in the mid-90s, or the early 90s at least. I just saw a picture he put up on Facebook, okay? That's a long time ago. So you can't just go out there and do this stuff and expect people to know what you're talking about here. Now, as far as the match is probably going to be no good, let's be honest. But their segment on Monday, I will say, segment on Monday where Nash went out there and he tried to bury CM Punk and he talked about how CM Punk was an indie geek and he was too small and that was preposterous that he was the champion. And meanwhile, Punk was doing his own inside stuff about how Nash is old and he thought that Eddie Guerrero was a vanilla midget and all of this stuff. And that's all fine and good inside stuff, but, you know, they were... There was that sense there, if you're not a kid, if you are a fan like myself and Mike and everybody listening to this right now, that was a pretty intriguing promo. And so, you know, as a fan of that nature, I'm kind of intrigued about this match. What's going to happen out there? Nash obviously thinks if push came to shove, I could beat up this little fella. And I'm sure Punk really thinks if push came to shove, I could beat up this old fella. And they went out there and they tried to embarrass each other. And I'm sure that they all went backstage and hugged and shook hands and talked about how cool it was. But there's also probably that part in the back of their mind that thought, man, I really schooled that guy on that promo. Or man, I can't believe that guy had the nerve to say that to me on the promo. There's something there for a fan like me. Now, for your average casual fan, there probably ain't nothing there, and the match itself probably is going to be no good.
Yeah, but, you know, I guess one thing is, with the Johnny Ace involvement, Stephanie saying what she said, you know, Vince still not forgotten by everybody in that line of security, you know, it seems to be that this is the Triple H, you know, CM Punk thing, and again, there's so many other people out there that could use this against CM Punk, I don't know.
We'll talk about it more after the break. Observer Live, Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 40 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Before the break, we were talking about CM Punk versus Kevin Nash. What a feud. What did you think of that promo on Monday? I mean, were you watching it? And I mean, what did you think as a fan watching that promo?
As a fan who lived through it, it was like the first thing was like, oh, God. Because you know what the one-liners from Nash are going to be, because we've heard them a zillion times. You're too small. You look indie. This, that, and the other. And it's like, you know, I'm already going into it with knowing you're going to hear that because, that you know, that's what they do. And it's going to be like, oh, God, why do you do this and say these? It's like the Daniel Bryan, Michael Cole thing. I mean, it's like, okay, we got it. Stop beating it into the ground. And it's like, we're going to take it back now to 1997. It's 2011. But we're going to take it back now to 96, 97 again with this stuff. But then he kind of got that what treatment, which surprised me, because Kevin Nash, one thing about Kevin Nash, if my kid grows up and wants to be a pro wrestler, I kind of want him to grow up to be Kevin Nash. Take as little punishment as possible. Position yourself in the best way you can, because he's a smart guy, he's a funny guy, he knows what he's doing, and in some ways that's something to be admired, but in situations like this, you know, how many years later, I don't necessarily want to see him. But then he starts getting flustered, which he never usually does with the what treatment and all that stuff. Punk goes out there, and one thing Punk can do is talk his ass off, and can be very pointed, very concise, very crisp, and he was. And I think that's one thing about the dynamic is, you know, if you're a fan who has lived through, you know, the vanilla midget comments and all that, you've lived through that whole, all that era, it is kind of you could have taken it as a comeuppance a little bit for Kevin Nash, and that crowd's not buying you like they used to, because they may not know who you are for whatever reason, and CM Punk just went out there and got you good. Now, Les Thatcher, who I talked to this week, is like, you know, hey, you never know what's, you know, Kevin Nash was told to either let Punk have or reel it in or anything like that. So, I mean, from that point of view, it's a pretty cool dynamic if you live through it. When it comes to a newer fan, I'm not sure how they reacted to it. They seem to be, you know, there were a lot of woes and stuff like that. But I have a feeling if somebody would have said ice cream bar, that would have gotten the biggest pop through the whole thing. So, again, maybe I'm taking the average fan.
Well, actually, let me cut you off there very quickly, because when you mentioned that, if you watch that promo, a key to that promo was some of the biggest reactions were the things like when CM Punk pulled out his cell phone and said he got a text from his little sister who thought Kevin Nash was dead. You know, everyone's like, oh! And then Kevin Nash mentions vanilla midgets, a reference, an obscure reference, mind you, from the mid-90s, and nobody reacts at all. That should tell you everything you need to know about the future direction of this angle and which direction you need to go.
And it's whether they beat it into the ground or not, because you and Todd Martin talked about this week about Alberto Del Rio, and there's one aspect of it where you go, hey, look, they were playing this for a while. They have long-term booking ideas. You got to give them credit for that. The bad part is they're tunnel-visioned on that, and I'm hoping they're not tunnel-visioned on this where they turn this into, again, I don't know what they could turn it into, but again, I may be taking for granted the WWE fan base that may be watching this and may be tied up into the soap opera aspect of, well, what were Stephanie and Hunter and Cena's dressing room doing? Who did send the text? What did it mean when Stephanie said you were going to get yours, Punk, and all that sort of stuff? So, again, I have a feeling they're going to go in that direction. It's going to be all about those types of loose end aspects and things like that, with CM Punk being a prop into this. But the thing is, as a CM Punk fan and as a guy that, you know, you can really do a lot of things with, and I don't think they take the right advantage of, hey, I don't know. You know, what else is out there right now past this for CM Punk besides what we were saying last year, or earlier on this year, which is, you know, Steve Austin. I mean, what else does Punk have right now as far as a feud goes or who he's positioned against or anything else other than to be a prop in this feud currently right now for Triple H?
I'm so jaded as a fan. Like when Nash came out on Monday and he says, I got a text and it said, big man, whoever wins, go out there and stick the winner, or whatever the text said. And he never said it was from Triple H, but all the announcers assumed it was from Triple H, and Punk assumed it was from Triple H, and I assumed it was from Triple H. And then later, you know, I start, you know, you hear that from different people that watch the show, you know, other viewers had different interpretations. They're like, oh, well, you know, Nash never said who sent it, so maybe Stephanie sent it, or you know, like you said, maybe whoever sent it or whatever. And it's just like, you know, 10 years ago, maybe I'd have been like, man, where's this story going? But I'm so jaded right now that it's just like, do I really honestly deep down think there's going to be a follow-up? Or do I honestly think deep down that if I get invested in this storyline and the mystery aspects of it, that they're really going to follow up on anything and it's going to make sense in the end? And sadly, I don't. And it's too bad. The one thing I will say that is a potential positive is that this is a storyline that in the end is going to involve Triple H. You know, down the road, I don't know if it's going to be at Survivor Series or if it's going to be earlier or if it's going to be later. At some point, we are going to see Triple H versus John Cena. I'm sorry, Triple H. Well, we see that one too, obviously. But at some point, we're going to see Triple H versus CM Punk. And it's going to come out that Hunter screwed Punk. I mean, I would say that, I don't want to say as certain as Alberto eventually getting the championship, but I'm pretty sure, I'm pretty confident that we're eventually going to get that match. So,
you know what, honestly, oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, so the one thing I will say is that because Triple H is involved in this storyline, I have more faith in things not dramatically changing than, for example, if it were a storyline involving Daniel Bryan. You know what I mean? Like, this is a Triple H storyline, so it's going to get the most attention of any storyline. It's going to be focused on the most. Triple H is going to stick to his guns about the way that he thinks it should go. There's a better chance in this storyline that you could actually follow along and get a payoff than a storyline involving pretty much anybody else in the company right now.
Oh, sure, you're going to get the payoff, but then, again, I mean, Triple H has already established himself as far as he probably should not be the master of ceremonies on every single show. He probably should have not gone out there and been the ref for this match. I mean, you know, him having the impact, if he's the guy who screws CM Punk and or John Cena, because I still would think that Cena and Punk need to be on the same side when all this stuff shakes out. And they all get screwed by Johnny Ace and Triple H and the system and all of that stuff, if that's the way you're going to go. But that would have had far more effect if Triple H has not been, you know, Triple H on these shows leading up to it. I mean, it's been so much of, like, of him constantly up there and him being the ref for this and everything else. I mean, it's going to lose a lot of impact if that's the way that they're actually going to go with it, where he's the one who screws them.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he is not worn out as well. I don't know if I should say he isn't worn out as welcome yet. He's been on a lot of shows, but, you know, that first, I'll always look back at this, you know. I don't know. I don't know how long it's going to last. Maybe Triple H is becoming like a Hogan, where the first time he's back on TV, it's a big deal, and then every sequential week after that, it kind of goes downhill. But, you know, it's his first day back on SmackDown, that showed it a huge rating. You know, Triple H is a guy that, you know, for those of us that have been watching for years and years and years, like, oh my God, Triple H back on top again. And, you know, if you have been watching for a long time, it is kind of infuriating. But, you know, to a lot of casual fans, you know, Triple H is a real big star. And he comes back on TV and he's involved in top storylines and people are interested in it. And, you know, I think that we gotta track the business of Triple H's return. You know, maybe it'll be a deal like Hogan where, you know, his first big match back and his first couple appearances on TV do big numbers and it's right back to normal again. Or maybe there'll be a prolonged little bump in pay-per-view business and in television ratings. So it still remains to be seen. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt here because he hasn't been gone a long time. And, you know, they may have some sort of storyline planned with, you know, maybe even a long-term storyline planned where eventually it leads to whatever dastardly thing Triple H does to CM Punk or whoever. In the end, the man to come back and make things right is The Undertaker, and you set up your Undertaker Triple H WrestleMania main event rematch, which a lot of people are expecting is going to happen on this show as well.
good Lord, you know, I can see the way WWE does things, that they're going to have a themed WrestleMania where we get Punk and against Austin and the right. It's like, you know, WrestleMania All-Stars against the current crop of WWE superstars.
That'd be a big show.
It would be a big show, and I tell you what, it would be one of those things that, in a lot of ways, they need to do. They need to do. Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker, Triple H, all of these guys who have picked other guys' brains from over the years and had a chance to learn and do these things, they rush these guys up too fast. It's not Dolph Ziggler's fault or John Morrison's fault that they're not, you know, where they should be right now, because they need guys like that to tell them how to be, you know, longtime wrestling stars. I mean, that era's almost over, and we're looking at a really, really weird, hazy future of guys who, it's going to be different wrestling. It's obviously different already, but it's going to be far different. Imagine Alex Riley, if you didn't see him for 2 years and he had a chance to travel and talk to guys and work, what he could have actually have been or what he could be.
If you do a main event, if you do a WrestleMania main event card, and you've got like Triple H, Undertaker in a rematch of last year's awesome match, Rock versus Cena, and Steve Austin versus CM Punk, which is, by the way, everybody, nowhere near a lock, but I would also say that it's not impossible. That match could take place. You know, if that's your triple main event of WrestleMania, that's a big show. That is a big show right there.
I'm paying $60 for that, no problem.
In fact, obviously on SmackDown this week, we had Alberto Del Rio versus Daniel Bryan. And awesome match. You saw the match. And, you know, that could have been a tease for a big match at WrestleMania this year of Daniel Bryan cashing in his title against his title shot against Alberto, if Alberto's still champion. But that, I don't know if I'd expect. We'll talk more about this after the break and take your questions. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates. We have newsletters. We have radio shows. If you love this show, and you only get to hear it once per week at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern, 6 o'clock p.m. Pacific, Sirius Channel 94, XM Radio 208, Sports Byline USA, streaming worldwide on the internet, you are missing out. WrestlingObserver.com. We do daily radio shows pretty much every single day. You got an exception here and there, but even though we've got exceptions here and there, such as yesterday where we didn't have a show, I've done many days where I've done as many as four shows in a single day. That's a long day. We cover everything. Pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, the history of wrestling, the history of mixed martial arts. Cover it all. And if you'd like a sample, just head up to WrestlingObserver.com, scroll down the right-hand side of the page, a listing of our latest three free radio shows. We put up one free show every week on the website, in addition to Wrestling Observer Live. So if you just go up to WrestlingObserver.com in the next couple of days, you'll get either a free Wrestling Observer Radio with myself and Dave Meltzer, or a free Brian and Vinny show with myself and Vinny. And if you like what you hear, sign up. Not only do you get every brand new show we do, which is 15 to 20 brand new shows a week, but you get our complete archive. Every show we have ever done dating back to 2005, which is almost how long it's been since Kevin Nash has been in WWE. You go up there right now, go into the archive. We have interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling. Mick Foley, Steve Austin. I'm trying to think of a who's who of WrestleMania main events we've had on the show. Ric Flair has been on the show. Brock Lesnar has been on the show. Bruno Sammartino has been on the show. Chris Jericho, Lance Storm. List goes on and on. They're all up in the archives right now. Daniel Bryan has been on the show. Tyson Kidd, Natalya, Paul Heyman, Batista. Exactly, Big Dave Batista. Tons of names. So head up right there and check it out. Delve into the archives once you sign up. It's only $10.99 a month. You can pay one time, try it out for a month, and if you don't like it, all you are out is $10. But I can tell you right now, if you love this show, if you love Wrestling Observer Live, I guarantee that you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. Try it. Just give it a try. Just 1 month. Just try it. And if you don't like it, you can email me and we'll figure something out. But I'm pretty sure if you like this show, you will love your subscription. So head up there and check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. It's very cheap, and you will get your money's worth. That's pretty much a guarantee. Let's jump into the mailbag here. We have a bunch of emails from various people talking things we've been discussing today. Fred here, is it me, or do you see them killing the Punk angle by putting him with Nash? What do you think?
No.
I think they actually, I think their idea is that by putting him with Nash, Nash will put him over and make him a bigger star. The problem is, if you followed pro wrestling for any length of time, having Kevin Nash in there as the guy to put somebody over is not always the best plan of action.
Hey, didn't CM Punk used to wrestle with Alex Shelley?
Sure.
Wonder how that turned out for Alex Shelley with Kevin Nash.
Oh, I thought you said Punk and Alex Shelley.
Well, they used to wrestle together. I'm sure that Punk would be thinking that more than anything, being teamed up with Nash.
I see. Nash and Shelley were also a... they did something together in TNA. I don't remember these TNA storylines. They're just... They blend together. Impact blends together. All right, this person, why does the GM booth continue to be set up on Raw and even last week's SummerSlam? I haven't seen that whole laptop angle touched in the past 2 months. Well, they must have some plan, otherwise they wouldn't bother.
Really? We just talked about the Fed, what you thought, and being a jaded wrestling fan. I mean, Michael Tarver checking out people backstage. The guy, who was it, Vic Grimes, when he attacked Rikishi down on the ring. I mean, things happen on that program that they just forget about.
Yeah, but if you've already decided, okay, the GM angle is dead, you don't need to set up the podium every week.
But maybe they're just doing it out of habit, and then 1 week it's not going to be there, and it just goes away. I mean, I don't know. That thing should probably just go away again. I mean, maybe you can play into this and you can tie up the loose ends, but it's not like wrestling's ever been good at all with, you know, trying to keep their storyline continuity straight.
All right, this person here says, I've heard people I respect, such as Les Thatcher, say that Rey Mysterio is too small to be the champ in WWE. I agree that he shouldn't be called the heavyweight champion, but I think he's a believable competitor, a hell of a worker, as well as popular and reliable enough to build the company around. What do you two think? Is there a size limit for the top guy, and can talent and popularity change the rules for someone like Rey? Well, first off, he should be called the heavyweight champion because he would be the heavyweight champion. That's the belt, the heavyweight championship of the world. So if you win that belt, you are the heavyweight champion, even if you're not a heavyweight. He's just fighting up in weight. I think that I don't know. If you're really good, like if you're an outstanding wrestler, I think even if you're small, you can be the champion. But you've got to be such an outstanding worker that the fans can watch and believe that you can beat these big guys, whether it be because of your speed or whether it be because you're really flashy and quick and can get everybody in various submissions and that sort of thing. I mean, just a great example. I mean, like, just go back to the early UFCs, like UFC 1, where, you know, it was by design that Hoist Gracie represented the family as opposed to Hickson. You know, Hoist was not renowned as a great champion of the Gracies when they grabbed him to have him represent the family in UFC 1. But the idea was, let's take a skinny guy that looks kind of goofy, and let's put him in a gi, and everybody is going to expect him to get killed, and he's going to go in there and he's going to run through everybody, which is what he did. And when it was over, people were like, my God, he's the real deal. Didn't matter how big or small the guy was. He went through and he beat everybody, and so people believed he was the real deal. So if you have a guy who's good enough that when you do matches with him, when the match is over, people have bought into it and believe, holy God, that guy's the real deal, then yes, he can be the champion. But there are not a lot of guys like that.
No, and it's not an insult. That's the biggest thing. A lot of people get offended when they hear guys like Les Thatcher say that, but you got to remember, I mean, Danny Hodge would have to play second fiddle to Lou Thesz, and there's always been an issue, and it's too bad because George St. Pierre and John Jones, who's 205 pounds, and St. Pierre's 170, and name the guys who can choke another bigger guy out, and you can respect guys who are smaller, but in, especially in professional wrestling, I mean, it's still, again, like you said, you have to be super incredibly great. Chris Benoit, Rey Mysterio, guys like that. And Rey Mysterio, unfortunately, for, you know, he's not the guy who's going to have a long, lengthy reign and lay waste to big guy after big guy after big guy. I mean, I'm sorry. The reality is usually that doesn't happen. That smaller guy is going to get beat by somebody. And it's just, again, it's, as you said, you have to be really good at what you do to be able to pull off that, you know, that thought. And even with wrestling changing, and I know there's a, it's a, that's got a lot to do with philosophy too, as far as people who grew up with Chikara, Ring of Honor, Dragon Gate, they're going to have a different idea than other people over what professional wrestling is. And it's also just what you think about it.
All right. This person here says, Brian and Mike, do you guys know what was the point of bringing Jim Ross back? He says maybe 3 or 4 words per Raw episode every week, and yet every week Michael Cole continues to bury guys like Daniel Bryan, but not in the funny Bobby Heenan way, in a complete jerk sort of way. What is Vince McMahon? Why does Vince McMahon think this is a good idea? Vince McMahon has had a long-standing love-hate relationship with Jim Ross. This is just another example of it. Jim Ross was brought back probably because they felt that they needed Jim Ross there in some way, because their announcing team is not doing a great job selling pay-per-views. But at the same time, Vince loves the Michael Cole character. He loves that character. And so, you know, Ross is back partly as a way to get Triple H over as a babyface, since he was doing a lot of rehiring and that sort of thing, supposedly, when he came back. But at the same time, it's also a way to get Ross out there every week. You know, Ross can do his thing and be effective in certain ways, but he's also going to be limited in what he can say, because they want Michael Cole to be the lead announcer. They're going to have a chance to bully him on the air as part of their anti-bullying campaign. And the whole thing is just a weird psychological hodgepodge of nonsense. How's that for an answer?
It's pretty classless, but with that said, I mean, JR goes back. It's what he loves to do, but he also knows he's going to take the abuse. I couldn't do it. I mean, especially with everything that they've done to him, including just wrecking hats and stuff like that. I mean, and it makes the people that are doing it and are around him too, you know, Dolph Ziggler and Jerry Lawler, it makes everyone uncomfortable doing it, where it's, you know, it's just pathetic. But with that said, JR goes back to it, and it's too bad it has to be that way.
This person says, Aaron here, first of all, condolences to Ed on the passing of his father. I know a lot of people spend a lot of time having fun fantasy booking WWE. Now that UFC is on Fox and is hoping to double or perhaps even gain 5 times its audience, I've been having fun with the idea of fantasy advertising for them. Presuming they want to get new viewers, how would you go about advertising their new show? Do you get the various forms of martial arts that they will be seeing over, so they don't think a choke is a crock like people did when Hoist Gracie first started? Do you spend time getting each of the 4 fighters that will appear on the November show over? Do you show the short matches of UFC history? The first promo for Fox is amazing. I hope they keep up the good work and get the audience increase Dana and the UFC and the sport deserve. What do you think, Mike?
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously you do what you can. I mean, you don't realize how many things air, like Saturday mornings on Fox, a lot of times before you wake up, and things like that that are sent out to these stations all across the country that are produced by them and air in ads, you know, weird spots and things like that. And you can see them, you know, putting who's going to be on that show on these different types of events and things like that. And, yeah, I mean, I just go all guns, you know, blazing at whoever it is. Say it's going to be like Clay Guida. You know, you get him out everywhere, and whoever you have, you just get him out all over the place. You show what he can do. There's highlight packages. I don't think you waste too much time, because it is 2011, on, like, you know, what is going on. Because I don't think there's a lot of people who think it's two guys humping on the ground, but I think enough people know mixed martial arts now, or know someone who knows about mixed martial arts, where they have at least a respect when they hear the words Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, even if they're not into ground fighting and things like that. So I don't think you beat that stuff into the ground, but I think you just get out all the personalities that you can and just keep pumping it away, and just getting as much crossover advertising as you possibly can.
Yeah, it's hard in 30 seconds, obviously, but I think that if you're going to do a 30-second commercial, then you got to show, like, a shot of some awesome knockouts, and you got to show some shots of some guys submitting to some arm bars and chokes and that sort of thing. And also think in there, you've got to have quick shots of the winner's hand being raised by a referee, and the loser standing right there and, you know, smiling or clapping or whatever, you know, just to remind people that, in fact, for those of you that don't really know what UFC is or have only heard of it, yes, people get knocked out. Yes, people get submitted. But guess what? It's a sport. There's a referee. The loser is not, in fact, dead. And you merge all these together into a 30-second commercial, and then you put the date at the beginning and at the end and maybe even in the middle. I don't know how you do it in 30 seconds, but those are the things you need to get out. There are quick submissions. There are quick knockouts. There's a referee. The loser is not dead. The winner gets his hand raised in a sporting event, and here's when you can see it happen. I think there, you know, someone who knows what they're doing could put this together in such a way that I think it'd be a hell of a commercial.
WEC guys doing Mountain Dew commercials or whatever it was, and John Jones doing K-Swiss ones, that's cool. But the more they can also link in with, you know, advertisers they already have is going to be clutch too.
This person here, we got time for one more. If WWE does follow through and Daniel Bryan cashes in Money in the Bank at Mania, who do you see his opponent possibly being? Read somewhere Daniel said he would love to work with Randy Orton. Is he foreshadowing a Mania 28 world title match? Orton would be fine. Actually, with Daniel Bryan, virtually anybody would be fine. I have no problem. It is going to raise the question, if Cena is fighting for one title and the Royal Rumble winner gets the other shot, where does Daniel Bryan fit in? We can talk about that a little after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And before the break, we were talking about Daniel Bryan and the briefcase. And Mike, what do you do here? Because Daniel Bryan has promised to cash in at Mania. Rock and Cena. Cena has promised it's going to be a title match. And the winner of the Rumble gets a championship match. So is Daniel Bryan just going to add himself to the Royal Rumble winner match with whoever is the champion? So it's a three-way? Is that the way they're going to go? Are they going to tease or perhaps, I can't imagine them teasing this, but perhaps teasing that he'll add himself to the Rock-Cena match? You know, what can they do here now that we're going to have three, I don't want to say championships, but championships or title shots in play?
Well, God, you know, Daniel Bryan Christian would be awesome, but I don't think they're going to stick around with Christian that long as far as in the upper tier there where they have Barrett, Sheamus, and Orton in that mix. They would be all be fighting for something. But look, it's realistic, too, that somebody just doesn't get tired with Daniel Bryan back there and think he's really a nerd and all that other crap that comes out of Cole's mouth during the broadcast. I mean, there's plenty of pay-per-views and time for him to give up that briefcase to a Barrett or somebody like that that could go off and face Randy Orton or be in the mix at WrestleMania.
So WrestleMania, obviously, the big show of the year, and we've talked about various matches here. Perhaps we'll talk more about this next week. They make a lot of changes on WWE television, as you're well aware if you've been watching it. But certain things are set in stone. And unless John Cena or The Rock gets injured, that match is a main event of WrestleMania. And thus, we've had a year of a slow build to that match. And I really think that when the day comes, when WrestleMania Day comes, I really think that people are going to feel like that's a really, really big match. And we could talk about this more next week on the show, as well as all of the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Don't forget, if you're not going to get a chance to hear the show until next week, well, consider WrestlingObserver.com. $10.99 a month, daily radio shows. Dave Meltzer and I are going to be back tonight with a brand new show. You don't have to wait a week. You can get a new show tonight at WrestlingObserver.com. We'll be back tomorrow after Raw as well. We got shows coming up all week long, 15 to 20 over the next week. So check out WrestlingObserver.com. Thanks again, Mike. Thanks, everybody at Sports Byline, Sirius XM. The whole nine yards. We'll talk to you again next week. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.